Welcome back. We're on episode 49, and we're coming up on the one-year anniversary next month for the podcast, which is really surprising to me. I'm preparing a special episode to look forward to, and I hope you'll enjoy what will be reflections on the podcast so far. As we move into this episode, I'm going to finish up with some lessons in leadership that I hope you'll find interesting and some really cool, no, really great news that comes my way. The biggest challenge was the civilian integration into the several career plans. And let me set the stage just one more time. The services organization includes child development centers, two officers, and enlisted clubs. There are golf courses, bowling centers, youth centers, and lodging. From mortuary affairs to food service and snack bars, outdoor recreation, aero clubs, and fitness centers, and more. Across each, there are entry-level employees to managers. Senior management includes branch and division chiefs and staff at all levels of command. It's a lot of people across many occupational specialty codes. And while that's actually true, the way that the personnel office categorizes many of them are to group several as just the term recreation aid. That's super broad. So, we held a committee across the organization to identify the major categories of employees because we knew we couldn't do every single category for all those activities. If memory serves me, there were more than 20 but less than 30 of these different areas. Then, we had to get a majority of groups to come up with a career ladder with appropriate education and training. Oh, by the way, we had a short time to do this. Why? We made a commitment to the organization that we wouldn't tie up their employees for the project for more than a set period of time. Otherwise, it would be nearly impossible to get volunteers. And this was way before Zoom, and the meetings were all in person at the services agency in San Antonio. So what did we do, and what did we learn? Well, we set major ground rules. No one's voice was more important than another. We had entry-level employees to senior managers, and several of the civilian employees were retired, enlisted, and commissioned officers. We also had two full colonels on the teams. We didn't want the most senior to stifle or impede conversation. The other major rule we came up with was that the recommendation had to align to the template that we developed by the earlier team. In other words, they couldn't make new rules. The key oversight was run by me and the chief of training at the agency, who was a highly respected retired chief master sergeant, which is the highest enlisted grade. Collaboration really did work with this project. So the timeline? We had to accomplish this across all of the groups in no more than 3 sessions of no more than 4 days. We did it in 2 sessions for most of them, and 3 for others. Any measure, this should have been a 6, 9, even a 12-month process, even more. The leadership lesson was that we would be satisfied with the 80% solution. Long story short, we made it. We got to the 80% or more solution, and then it took months. It was at least 6 months, and it might have been more, to get to the last 10%. And we did that, of course, with just the staff. What we realized is that we had good groundwork and the career ladders were actually similar to large numbers of groups. My 3 leadership lessons were, first, set the ground rules so there were really clear bumpers because there was such a broad group of people across many small groups. Next, don't pressure the groups. They knew they had a timeline and people want to succeed, so let them. The last lesson was not to sweat the small stuff, and that's where the 80% solution came in. If we tried to get to a final product, we would probably have gotten to a 20% solution because everyone would be nitpicking over the smallest, tiniest detail. Generally, lower and middle grade employees wanted more structure and training for progression. It was more of a show me where I need to go and what do I need to do to move ahead, and I'll follow that path. The higher you go, the more difficult it is to get there, because the general mindset is, oh, I know what I need to do, and I already have what it takes to move ahead. We were the first directorate in the Air Force to take on this project, and some followed afterwards hearing about the work that we did. There are many benefits of this project for the future of services. Hi, Kona. I can't see. Sweetie. Thank you. Oh, now you're stepping on. I gotta stop for a second. And we're back. The reason I have to pause is because when Kona comes up, she steps on the keyboards and the things, and it turns off microphones. She steps on keys that does crazy things. Anyway, we're back. So anyway, there were many benefits of the project for the future of services. The primary benefit was that we wanted and needed civilian employees to be as versatile as military employees, in as much as with these career paths, we could have employees who could cross-train more easily and move up in the organization within a branch or division. As the Air Force would change, we saw this was a way to be more nimble in moving with future changes, because we know that change never stops. I hope that was the case now, nearly 30 years later. Getting back to after the wedding with David and Wendy, which was just a wonderful, wonderful event. I mean, the table arrangements were amazing. Anyway, they were ready to start a family. After a little bit, Wendy is pregnant, and not only pregnant, she's going to have twins. This is really exciting. And when I heard the great news, she got really serious and said, "So, when the time comes, will you film the birth?" Let's see. My head is swirling with all kinds of images and the reaction of how do you say no in a way that is both loving and acceptable. As you know, I think pretty quickly on my feet, so I've got this. My answer was, "Of course, I'd be happy to." Oh, that's not how I pictured it in my head. I'm always ready to help, and I came up with ideas for names. I think early on they learned that they were going to have two boys. What were good twin names? After throwing out several great names, mostly surrounding around versions of my name, they were all turned down. I got it. How about Kevin and Nevik? Nevik? What kind of name is that? Well, it's Kevin backwards. What a great idea. I mean, so few names can be phrased that way. If you went with Bob and Bob, how would you know who was who? It was pretty soon that my super great idea was going to be rejected. But that didn't stop me from continuing to wear them down. Well, try to wear them down. I still think they're great names. From time to time, other friends were having children, and I often threw out the name Nevik. After all, you don't need Kevin to have a Nevik, right? Well, it was about this time that my friend Rich and his wife were expecting their second child. And again, I proposed Nevik. There was no interest once again. Darn it, we have to find someone to have that amazing name. Well, I told Rich that I'm going to call him Nevik as a nickname. He was pretty sure that wasn't going to go over very well. Not long after that, Rich said they would like me to be their son's godfather. Wow, my second godchild. That was such an honor, and of course, I said yes. And I also said, so I guess that I can't call him Nevik. Jared was born, which is a much better name for sure. I have a story that is really, really funny. Well, funny for me. I was visiting, and Susan said she had to go upstairs to finish up something, and if I would just watch Jared. Jared was sitting in his high chair, and so, of course, I can do that. I was playing with Jared and came up with a brilliant idea. What could I teach this young lad? So, I would touch my cheek with my finger and then stick out my tongue. I did this several times, and eventually, Jared would stick out his tongue when I touched my cheek. You know, being an educator, teaching comes easy. Jared is a bright boy, and he learned quickly. I was pretty pleased with myself. She came down, and I said, I taught Jared something. She was like, wow, what did you teach him? I touched my cheek, and Jared stuck out his tongue. Let's just say she wasn't super impressed. For a couple of visits afterwards, he would still remember my little trick, although I doubt if he remembers it now. Soon thereafter, it came time for the twins to come into the world. I get a call, Wendy is going into labor. Come to the hospital and film the birth. Well, I'm pretty excited that the twins are coming, but I'm still hesitant about the filming thing. I get to the hospital and it's like a maze, as many are. I could not find the maternity ward and would ask for directions. And I'd get a couple of turns in and I'd have to ask again. Finally, I went with, excuse me, I'm Dr. Twilliger. Where's maternity? Well, I was escorted to the area and found my sister. Okay, I know that might have been a little sneaky, but time was of the essence. I get there and Wendy's progressing along. Unfortunately, it's taking a little longer than the doctor would like. So the twins would have to be born cesarean. And the first thing that Wendy says, my brother can still film it, right? I'm thinking, I think no. And she says, yes. Okay. Well, we're all set up. And it was truly the most amazing thing that I have ever experienced. I was so caught up in the miracle of birth that one of the nurses said, are you filming? Oh, no, I wasn't, and quickly turned on the camera. Again, it was just so amazing, and I'm really glad that I didn't listen to the voice in my head when she asked me to do this. The rest of that story is for others to tell, and I will never forget the wonderful gift that Wendy and Dave gave me to be there. In addition to my teaching skills with Jared, there is a story with my goddaughter as well. When she was young, we would play one of our favorite games, which was Cootie. I don't know if it's still around. It's a game where you make an insect with parts, and I can't recall how you do it, but I do remember we had a lot of fun doing it. With my pride today and my godchildren, both Bethany and Jared, they're doing amazing things as they're both adults. I will share a story in a future episode when I talk about the lost decade. And what I will say today is that while my personal affliction was a huge challenge, when I learned how it affected these amazing people, it is an example where I failed. At least today, I know the what and the why, and it doesn't replace the time lost in that period of time. With my nephews, there are two stories that are really memorable that I want to share. And well, actually, there are many stories that are memorable. I was thankful that I lived close enough during those first years. Anyway, these two stories are just fun. Wendy was a fan, as was I, of Ann Geddes. She's that famous photographer who would take pictures of babies with all kinds of objects, often nature, and it makes you smile with the beauty of a small baby. One picture was a baby on a bed of tulips. I bet you can all picture this innocence and beauty. So we tried it. It was around Easter, and we got a couple of bunches of tulips. After all, there were two babies. We fanned out the tulips, ever so gently placed the boys on the tulips, and it did not go well. They were not happy. Being persistent, as you have seen with me and the Princess Kona, getting the photo is paramount. We staged it again and again, and finally did get a photo. It wasn't Ann Geddes level. Being astute as we are, we finally realized that it wasn't that the boys didn't care for the tulips. The tulip leaves and stems were very cold. I smile just thinking about it. The other story is about a confident young single man who has too much confidence. It wasn't too long after the boys were born, and I think, not sure, it was around either an anniversary or some special event, and I had a secret plan. The first part of the plan, well, the main part of the plan, was to get possession of their kitchen in their house and make an amazing pear and cranberry pie. I had made this pie before, and Wendy loved it, and so I wanted to make it once more for this occasion. How do I get them out of the house? I know. I'll volunteer to babysit and give them time for a date night, because it had been a while, and anyone with a young child, much less twins, getting some alone time is precious. They were a little hesitant, gave me the number where they would be in case of an emergency, which, of course, what kind of emergency could there possibly be? So my evil plan was going to work. I could make the pie because the boys were sleeping and, alas, they woke up and they were not happy. While I had the phone number, I wasn't going to call them. I could easily take care of them and still finish the pie. Alas, no. I couldn't find their pacifier. I didn't know how to quiet them. I tried rocking them in my arms. I tried singing to them, which probably made things worse. And finally, yes, finally, I had to call. It wasn't too long after they got there because they hadn't even gotten their food yet. So they got the food to go and rushed home. At least I made you a celebratory pie because the pie did come out okay. Where were the pacifiers? Apparently, in my lack of experience with babies, despite my being a godparent to two, the pacifiers got stuck in their outfits, and it was almost like the tulip thing all over again. They were a bit uncomfortable. The curious thing is that I wasn't allowed to babysit them again, as I remember, and looking back. Oh well, parents are pretty smart when they choose who can and maybe who can't babysit. Back at work, surprisingly, it's almost time to think about my next move. I really don't like this aspect of the military. I really liked what I was doing. I liked living in Northern Virginia, and because of my prior enlisted service, by now I had almost 15 or maybe close to 16 years of service. I could retire since I had the requisite number of years commissioned to retire as an officer, and with my experience in education, I was sure I could venture into a second career. With this thinking, I was ready to try for an extension. That's not really going to go well, because when you're on the air staff, the idea is that you take the staff job, then go back to a base and add to your career. It's really frowned on. I got all the advice about why staying would not be good for my career, and decided to still pursue the extension. I was well respected and had done some really good work on the staff, and I did get an extension, and it wouldn't be the first one. Another huge lesson in life. If you don't ask, the answer is always no. In the spring of 1996, there was news that the Secretary of Commerce, Ron Brown, was traveling by plane, and unfortunately, it went down in Croatia. It was a horrible crash, and since it was a member of President Clinton's cabinet, and the 34 perished in the crash, the Air Force was called to assist with the mass casualty. I mentioned in a previous episode that services was responsible for mortuary affairs. An important part of this mission is the port mortuary at Dover Air Force Base. You likely may have seen pictures or scenes of this in news articles during the war when the fallen would come back to the United States because they would fly into Dover Air Force Base. The Air Force had, and likely still has, the most recognizable and respected response across the military services for mass casualty, and the first reception point from overseas of active duty deaths. Because of this, and that he was on an Air Force aircraft, the Chief of Staff activated the command post within the Pentagon to prepare and assist for the return of Secretary Brown and the passengers on the aircraft. I was in the command post during this period, along with a team of Air Force Services personnel. The function that I was part of was to coordinate the reception on arrival to Dover. To do that, we had to arrange for 35 near-identical hearses at the flight line because this would be televised around the world. The challenge was there were some funeral homes with white hearses, some that had doors open to the left instead of to the right. Some weren't similar enough, some had too much lettering on them, and we worked hard through the night due to the time difference in Croatia and the flight back to Dover. It was a very long night. And then turned on the TV in the command post to CNN. What was amazing, and I'm getting a chill telling this story, was that our work was unfolding in real time on TV. As we planned it. There they were, the men and women of the Honor Guard, to the workers from the port mortuary, and a delegation of senior military
and administration officials on the arrival of the aircraft carrying those who perished. A sense of accomplishment and pride was felt in the entire room. I don't recall the three-star general who was there overseeing the entire operation, but he told us that our work was perfect, and for me, to see it unfold was truly satisfying. Another big event that occurred in 1996 was I applied for the White House Fellowship Program. This is a program where thousands of people apply for a program where you work within the most senior level of the administration for a year. At most, less than 20 are selected. It's actually closer to 15. It's very competitive, and there were several levels to compete. The last level before the final selection are the regional finalists. These are the less than 100 that are whittled down to the last 15 to 20 selected. That's it. It's a long shot, and yet I did have both a unique background and a very good military career by most measures. I get the call. I'm a regional finalist. Wow, I could not believe it. It was odd that I was going to the regional location in Chicago and not the Washington, D.C. location. There are only 4 regional locations, and typically you go to the closest. Oh well, I flew to Chicago. There were several notes that are provided to finalists in terms of preparation. At the regional event, they tell you that you are on from the time your plane touches down. The social events are being evaluated as well as the formal events the next day. The interview process would include a couple of one-on-ones, a 3-on-1 interviews, and a panel-on-1 interview. Who are on the panels? Well, in Chicago, the host, or the regional chair, was the chairwoman for the Democratic National Committee for the state of Illinois. While the fellowships are nonpartisan, like anything in D.C., nothing is completely nonpartisan. At the social event, you meet all the notables that are there and well-connected to the DNC. The granddaughter of President Roosevelt was there. Oh, by the way, she wrote a book and gave us each an autographed copy. There were several members of President Clinton's task force on national health care reform that was headed by Mrs. Clinton. There were also several task force wannabes there. I think you can get the picture. We introduce ourselves around the table, and there is a doctor who found a cure for a pediatric disease. There was a woman who wrote 3 books. There, I could go on and on. Oh, by the way, I was also one of the oldest people there. These are exceptionally accomplished people, and I am not feeling confident. So the interview day comes, and the first interview, I'll tell my story. I was the boy in the trash can, and here I am, earned a doctorate, working at the highest levels of the Air Force, and, well, did not cure any diseases. What did I learn? Well, once people heard my story, they all wanted to hear the story at the next level of interviews. So this was encouraging. I was interesting, at least. There were 2 questions that I clearly did not do well on. The first was, what book have you read that you were inspired by? By now you know that I don't like to read and am not well read. So I have not read any books of significance except the Bible. So that was my answer. Now, there's nothing wrong with the answer, except that the root of the question was to determine how well-read you were. The other question was, when you were in high school, who was your hero? Now, remember that most are in their 20s or early 30s, and I'm almost 40. So, high school. Well, now you know my high school experience. So I'm also thinking, what are they looking for? I didn't appreciate who my audience was. I said very confidently, President Nixon. Dead silence. Uncomfortable silence. This was at the group interview. Why would you say that? Well, he did a lot to open up the United States to China. I talk about some other accomplishments, and I'm thinking in my head, he was a pretty popular president until Watergate. So I then said, don't we want every person, especially in high school, to look up to the President of the United States? I was doomed, and I could feel it. If you're chuckling right about now, It was an honest answer. And even by then in high school, I knew I couldn't be the President of the United States, and I wished that I could be. At the end of the process, you get an out brief. That was a good thing because while you didn't know if you were selected or not, you would get valuable feedback on the experience. I was told that first, it was my pedigree that got me to the regionals. That meant my doctorate from William & Mary was very notable. The other thing that I took away from the feedback was that I was both energetic and a good storyteller and emphasized my views, and that was also a good thing. And I didn't make it. I did get an amazing certificate, and I'll post a photo in the episode photos. I also got a truly memorable, positive experience. The other finalists, well, if I was on the selection committee, just based on their accomplishments, I would have selected them all, because they really were amazing Americans. It's not sour grapes. I did learn that the other military applicants, and there were four if my memory holds correctly, were all at the regional location in Washington, D.C. And I was told by the chairwoman of the process that I should have been at that particular regional event. Next week, we'll continue my journey in Washington. We get a new director, and I get an unusual call while I'm on travel to Hill Air Force Base in Utah that helped change the future of Air Force services to where it is today. Have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for listening.